There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to another Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Together where we get to spend a bit of time preparing ourselves, gearing ourselves, elevating ourselves, and inspiring ourselves for the coming Shabbos Kodesh. And a warm, warm welcome to everyone in our radio family who's taken the time to join us, hopefully, to learn something and make this Shabbos the most incredible Shabbos we've ever experienced. As always, this broadcast is brought to you as a refuah shleima for the Choyli of Am Yisrael, Bifrat, particularly we're referring to Miriam Ahuva Bas Esther, Yosefa Bas Talbi, Chaya Shena Bas Rezel, Aviva Sharon Bas Mina Shena, Chaim Moshe Ben Chas Yerusa, and Menachem Mendel Ben Nechama Dina. B'seich Shor Chol Yisrael. May all these Cholim and all the many, many Cholim and Nitzrochim in all of Klai Yisrael have refuah shleima b'korev mamish. The set we have with the Zeich this week to read two Parshis. And the second parsha we're going to read begins, Ele Masse B'nai Yisrael Asher Yotzu Me'etz Mitzrayim. These are the journeys of B'nai Yisrael who went forth from the land of Mitzrayim. The Torah makes a point of detailing each and every one of the nation's encampments in the Midbar. Clearly, we must learn a lesson from this pasuk. 42 trips. Why do we have to be told them? So Rav Yerucham Levavitz, that's how the Miro Mashkiach, explains, based on the commentaries of the Rishonim, that the idea of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Egyptian Exodus, is based on the principle that it and all its accompanying miracles and wonders were revealed for anyone to see. No room existed for even the biggest fool or greatest agnostic to deny what took place. If one possessed even a modicum of intelligence, he saw what was clearly the divine intervention in its most illuminating and transparent form. Furthermore, we recognize an underlying principle of the mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Hashem wants the Yetziah with every miracle and wonder that preceded and accompanied it to be indelibly ingrained in the hearts and minds of His people. We should never forget that miracles abound, which we may not even see. But just as they occurred in Mitzrayim, they continue to accompany us to this very, very day. That encountering a revealed miracle can be, and in fact should be, a profoundly transformative experience. Right? When someone experiences such a moment, it can lead to a shift in perspective, allowing him to see Hashem's world through a whole new lens. As a result, everyday occurrences, which up until this time had sort of appeared mundane and insignificant, take on a new image and reality. The individual now sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every aspect of his life, understanding that if one trusts in Hashem, all the complexities of life seem to become less complicated. Encountering a revealed miracle serves as a reminder that even the most ordinary moments, which we accept as, so to speak, normal occurrences, can in fact hold for us profound meaning. This new approach to the ordinary will, by extension, then generate a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of gratitude and reverence for the extraordinary within the ordinary. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas, Matos and Maaseh Tavshin Pei Dalet. So this coming Shabbos, we have two big events coming up. First of all, this double Pasha that we're going to read, which of course is the culmination of Sefer Bamidbar. And we're also going to be doing Mevorachim Chodesh, blessing the new moon for the month of Menachem Av, which Bez Hashem will begin on Monday. So let's perhaps talk about and maybe focus on a fascinating connection between the 3 weeks of Ben Amitzarim and the Pasha, particularly of Maaseh, which is always read on the second of these three special Shabbos. Right? As it's, we will always point out, this is somehow always significant because Ezra Sefer, right, arranged the cycle of the annual Pashas, of the annual Torah readings, with deliberate intent, the Gemara Megillah says. Therefore, we're going to explore the kind of profound depth and wisdom of Chazal, which somehow, apropos the lessons that we need to learn from the Pasha that kind of summarizes the 42 journeys traveled by Klal Yisrael in the Midbar prior to entering Eretz Yisrael. This is a lesson that should accompany us and strengthen us throughout our times of Golus, until Bez Hashem we merit the final and Bez Hashem imminent, complete Geula in a swiftly in our times. Parshas Maaseh opens, we know, with the following pasuk. These are the journeys of Bnei Yisrael who departed the land of Mitzrayim according to their legions, Biyad Moshe Aaron, led by Moshe and Aaron. Chazal expand on the pasuk in the Medrash. The Medrash says in Bamidbar Rabbah, says this refers to what Chazal calls pasuk in Tehillim. You led your nation like a flock by the hand of Moshe and Aaron. That's the pasuk, and Chazal explained that the word Nochisa, you led, is actually an acronym alluding to all the miracles and salvations performed on behalf of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, in the merit of Moshe and Aaron. Right? To quote the Medrash, Rabbi Loza said, you made so many nisim for them. You gave them chayim. You gave them life. You split the yam for them. You gave them a Torah. And through whom? Through Moshe and Aaron. Right? So we see, we have the word Ches, Chaim. We have the Yud, Yam. We have Tav, which is Torah. And we have Moshe and Aaron. That's Nochisa, right? Nochisa is the Nun stands for Nisim, Ches stands for Chaim, Yud is the Yam, the splitting of the sea, and Tav is the Torah. That's one explanation. Rabbi Yeshua said there's a second acronym also. He says, you did Niflois, wonders for them. You gave them Cherus, you gave them freedom, right? Yemincha, your right hand, saved them. And you gave them Talui Rosh, you gave them an elevated status. So again, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it would be Niflois, that's the Nun, and then that the Ches is Cherus, it's freedom, and then the Yud is Yemincha, your right hand, that's what saved them, and Tav, you gave them this Tali Rosh, you gave them this elevated status, through Moshe and through Aaron. And the Medrash brings a third acronym, is also suggested. A Chazal say, right? We say to Hashem, you raised Nevi'im from amongst them. That's a Nun. You raised Chasidim, right? Very devout people from amongst them. That's the Ches. You raised Yesharim, upright people from amongst them. And you raised Tamimim, perfect ones from amongst them. So again, it's Nun, right? The Nun stands for Nevi'im, prophets. Ches, Chasidim. Yud is Yesharim. And Tav is Taminim from amongst them, right? Through Moshe and Aaron. There's a fourth one also that the Medrash suggests. Rabbi Akiva says, you did Noirois, you did awesome feats for them against their enemies. Ches is for Charoin Af. You sent your flaming wrath against them. Yud is Yodcha. Your hand fought them. And the last one is Tahimos. You sort of covered them up in the depths, right? Through whom? And always through Moshe and Aaron. So we're going to try to understand why Achazal cited the words of David HaMelech here. You led your nation, Nochisa, like a flock by the hand of Moshe and Aaron. And why? Why did they exploit all these various kind of Rosh Tevis of acronyms related to the word Nochisa, right? To kind of glamorize the feats performed on behalf of Yisrael. After all the miracles HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed through Moshe and Aaron are literally depicted and explained explicitly in our Parsha and elsewhere in Tanakh. So what sort of chiddush did Chazal find in the words of David HaMelech that deserves mention and is not mentioned here? To explain Chazal's kind of profound intent, so we're going to need to refer to an important principle taught in the comments of the Avodas Yisrael. Kodesh Samagid, it's a schus to mention him on Erev Shabbos. This parsha is always read, she said, Ben Amitzarim, right? During the constrained times, right? Which are considered to be 21 days, as Rashi explains. Now, 21 days and 21 nights adds up to 42, corresponding to the 42 journeys that one must make. Bein Amitzarim. In other words, to be misaken, to rectify everything and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Although it's a time of sadness, during which we kind of really feel bad and bemoan the churban of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's house, nevertheless, one must encourage oneself and be metal and purify oneself and his heart to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Torah and Tefillah with happiness, especially while reciting the songs of praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rashi that he refers to concerns the words of the Navi Yirmiyahu, says, Vayidvar Hashem Elai Lemar Ma Taraye. Hashem says, what do you see, Yirmiyahu? But Amari says, Makel Shoked Aniroye. He says, I see a staff made of almond wood. Now Rashi comments in the name of the Medrash Agada that an almond grows and completes its development during a 21-day period, corresponding to the number of days between the 17th of Tammuz, on which the city was breached and kind of divided, and the 9th of Av, on which the Beis Hamikdash of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was burnt down. We're going to carry on with this after the short break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. You better stay with us because we're just getting warmed up.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Matas Maaseh, the two sedras that are going to complete Sefer Bamidbar. We're talking about the beginning of Parshas Maaseh with its 42 journeys. 42, we said, is 21 times 2, 21 days and 21 nights. And the 29, as we just quoted Rashi, corresponds to the 21 days between the fast of the 17th of Tammuz, on which the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, and Tisha B'Av, on which the Beis Hamikdash was burnt down. In reality, there are actually 22 days from Shavuos Tammuz until Tisha B'Av. This kind of minor discrepancy can be reconciled easily if we assume that the Medrash was only taking into account the days that precede Tisha B'Av. After all, these 21 days were days of preparation for the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, all right? After the city had been breached on Shavuos Tammuz. During those days, the possibility still existed to prevent the Churban if the people would have kind of done tshuva and performed a sincere return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited patiently for 21 days, like a kind of a developing almond, in anticipation of the burning of the Beis HaMikdash. Tisha B'Av, however, the day on which the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed, is not actually part of that tally. To truly appreciate this association, let's try to talk about a insight from the Megal HaMukos in the beginning of Matas Maaseh. He writes that the 42 journeys in the Midbar represent the source of the journeys Klal Yisrael was destined to travel throughout all of our Golias until the coming of the Mashiach. He finds a hint to this fact in the first pasuk, right, of the parsha where we just said before, Ele Mase b'nei Yisrael asher yotzu me'eretz Mitzrayim letzavosam. They went out in their house, Miyad Moshe Aaron. But he notes that the first letters of the first four words, Ele, Masei, Bnei, and Yisrael, refer to Aleph is Edom, right? Masei is Modai, Bnei is Bovel, and Yisrael is Yavan. The four primary exiles are mentioned in those first four letters. So therefore, it appears that our Chazal intended to teach us in the Medrash that Yisrael's ability to succeed and survive the 42 journeys in the really, really dangerous Midbar is attributable to their simple, resolute emunah in the leadership of Moshe and Aaron. They followed these two loyal shepherds like a flock of sheep. In fact, in the words of the Medrash, just like a flock, wherever the shepherd leads it, it follows him willingly. So too, Yisrael, everywhere that Moshe and Aaron led them to journey, they would journey willingly after them. As the Pasuk says, Ela Maseim B'nei Yisrael. These are the journeys of the B'nei Yisrael. Right? And this kind of corroborates that what it says, you led your nation like a flock. From this, we should be able to evidence that this is also true of all the other Goliaths. To succeed and survive, we must follow the leaders of Yisrael who have replaced Moshe and Aaron in whatever generation we find ourselves. Let's hear what Chazal is saying. When we say Nochisa Katzein Amcha B'yad Moshe Aaron, you led your nation like sheep. So there's a concept taught in this forum and throughout our literature. And in fact, it's actually taught by the Balatanya. Balatanya brings it in Likutei Amorim, in chapter Gimel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with 10 spheros, right? And they, of course, divided into two groups. The first group consists of the three spheros, right? Chochma, Bina, and Das. And they're kind of really likened to the brain in one's head. The second or lower group consists of the seven midas, Chesed, Gevura, Tferes, Netzach, Hoyid, Yesod, and Malchus, and they represent the limbs of the human anatomy, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu employs, so to speak, to manage what transpires in all of the universe. The source for this is found in the pasuk of Pesach Elio, where it says Chesed represents the right arm, Gevura represents the left arm, Tiferes represents the upper body, the torso, Netzach and Hoid represent the two lower extremities, Yesod represents the bodily extremity of the holy bris, and Malchus represents the mouth associated with Torah Shebaal Peh, which explains, of course, all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's royal decrees. So you have the seven spheres connecting to all the areas of the body. Additionally, our Sfarim explain that Yisrael are guided, we know, by the seven, right, Arayim Neman, the trustworthy shepherds, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. Right, they serve as the chariot, or kind of, I guess, the prototypes of these seven meters. Chesed, Gevura, Teferes, Netzach, Hoid, Yesod, and Malchus. Right? According to this sort of model, Moshe Rabbeinu, the fourth shepherd, lines up with the Midah of Netzach. And Aaron HaKohen, the fifth shepherd, aligns with the midah of hayit. They represent the two legs of the body of Kedusha that led Klai Yisrael during their 42 year sojourn in the desert, right? That they transported the body to wherever it needed to go. Now we can now perhaps better appreciate what Chazal are telling us, what the Medrash is telling us on that pasuk, right? These are the journeys of Bnei Yisrael, right? Who departed the land of Mitzrayim, according to their legions, led by Moshe and Aaron. In other words, citing the pasuk and telling him, you led your nation like a flock by the hand of Moshe and Aaron. Since Moshe and Aaron, right, the prototypes of Netzach and Hoyt, right, were compared to the two legs of the body of Kedusha, it was therefore their job to lead the holy people of Klai Yisrael on their 42 journeys in the Midbar, right? On their way to Eretz Yisrael. You're the legs, you have to carry them. It's almost surprising, however, that these two great leaders of Klai Yisrael only represented the two lower extremities of the body of Kedusha. Undoubtedly, right, legs, of course, are extremely, extremely important, right? Seeing as a body cannot go anywhere, right, without them. Nevertheless, the brain serves a much, much more important function than the legs. In truth, we can explain this based on the writings of the Arizal. The Arizal teaches us that the roots of the neshamas of Moshe and Aaron are actually from the top three spheres, from Chokhmah, Bina, and Das. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu merited delivering the Torah to Klai Yisrael because his neshama stemmed from the supreme, supreme Chokhmah from which the Torah emanates. In the words of the Chazal, Oraisa b'chokma d'le'ela nafakta. The Torah emanated from the wisdom, the chokma of the divine. Similarly, the following pasuk attests to the greatness of Aaron HaKohen, pasuk in Malachi, ki sivsei HaKohen yishmeru das, v'teiru yivakshu mipiu, for the lips of the Kohen should safeguard knowledge, and people should seek Torah from his mouth. Nevertheless, their Kedusha was so great that the neshamas, right, expanded from the lofty first three spheres, right, Chokhmah Bina V'Das, down to the lower midas, right, to the Netzach and Hoyt, to the prototypes for the two midas of Netzach and Hoyt, representing the two lower extremities, so that they could lead the holy body of the people of Christ. So Moshe Rabbeinu are the highest, they're the Chokhmah, brain, and they're also the lowest, the two legs. You can perhaps add a little bit zatz and pfeffer, embellish this a little bit, based on a teaching also in the Sefer Yetzirah that comes from the if you think about it, the very structure of Kedusha. He says, Na'ut Saifan B'tchilasai. He says, we know that the end is always embedded in their beginning and their beginning in their end, right? So like just like a flame is connected to a burning coal. So what does that mean? It says man's kind of physical stature was created such that the lower part of his anatomy, the feet, would be intimately connected with the top of his anatomy, right? The three spheres associated with the brain in his head. Conversely, the beginning of his anatomy, which is the brain in the head, must be connected with the lower part of the anatomy, the legs. This was the case with the elite neshamas of Moshe and Aaron. They were rooted in the highest three spheres, right, in the head, right, Chochmah and Das, and descended from that loftiest of places to the two midas of Netzach and Hoid to function as the two legs of the body of the people of Klai Yisrael. As such, they led them on the proper path throughout these 42 journeys in the Midbar. So, using this Mahalach, so let's now talk about and explain the matter of Moshe and Aaron and their practical significance for each and every one of us. The Baal Shem teaches us a really, really important and fundamental principle: how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of the midas. See, the two midas, Netzach and Hod, specifically, are the two central pillars of Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, the entire structure of Kedusha rests on these two pillars, on Netzach and Hod. In the same manner that the human body stands on its two feet. The Gemara expresses this fact as follows. The Gemara in Makkos, Daf Chof Daled, says, Bo chakbakuk v'midon al achas. Right? Tzadik b'menoso yichye. Chakbakuk came along and incorporated the entire Torah. Right? Stood them into one. As it says, Pasuk in Chabakuk Pesabes, right? But the righteous person shall live through his emunah, through his faith. Now, the source for this idea is found in the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, who presents the Avoda of the Midas in the names of his Rebbe, of his teacher, the Baal Shem Tov. And he writes that, V'netzach v'hoid sheba adam hu amude kiyuman. In other words, right? V'hoi sheha adam mamin emuna sabayre amitasai. In other words, the midas of Netzach and Hoid in a person are the pillars on which his true emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is founded. Similarly, the Degel Machner Ephraim, right, brings down in the name of the Baal Shem, right, he says, it is known that Netzach and Hod are two parts of the body, the two lower extremities that are the key to Emunah, two supports of the ultimate and real truth. So let's follow this along. So let's explain how the concept of simple, unadulterated emuna is dispersed over the two central sort of pillars of Netzach and Hod. So he said the pillar of Netzach, the right leg, represents emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the good times. When a person is able to sort of defeat his enemies and succeed in all of his endeavors. For even in those situations, it's necessary to have a strong emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, a person is liable, chas v'shalom, to entertain kind of false beliefs, right, that the Yetzirah introduced into his heart, and I'll say, Koichiv Yoitzim Yodi, it's me, look what I've done. As the Torah actually warned us, Yomatu Bevecha, you'll say in your heart, Koichiv Yoitzim Yodi, Osi Eliezachai, I'll say, look, my strength and the might of my hand made all of this wealth. Right? And then there are terrible, terrible predictions made for someone who walks around with that belief in his heart and in his mind. In contrast, the pillar of Hoyt, the left leg, represents Emunah in Hashem in times of trouble. The reason this situation is called Hoyt is because at such times it's also necessary to express Hakaras HaToev, Hoydah, gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we have learned in the Gemara in Brachos, Chayiv Adam Nevarach Al Ara Kashem Shemavarach Al Ateva. A person is obligated to bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the bad, just as he blessed HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the good. So even though a situation appears to be bad, nevertheless, one thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu on account of the emunah that everything he does is for our benefit. Now, so this actually tells us why it was that Moshe and Aaron were the prototypes for the midas of Netzach and Hod. Although they achieved greatness in the Torah due to their association with the first three spheres, Chochmah, Bina, V'Das, nevertheless, due to their extreme Kedusha, they served HaKadosh Baruch Hu with unwavering emunah. Thus, they epitomized the two legs of Netzach and Hod, right, with the Midah of Netzach. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to defeat the Egyptians and all of Yisrael's enemies. While with the Midah of Hoyt, Aaron was willing to sacrifice his life under the direst of circumstances when Yisrael sinned with Egel Azov. He was willing to accept the blame rather than defaming Klaiso, so that they could make amends by means of tshuva. But with the strength and conviction of their unwavering emunah, they led Klaiso throughout the Midbar and inspired them and us to also serve our Kadosh Baruch Hu with this simple, pure emunah, no matter what's going on, no matter how terrible the situation, no matter how desperate and bleak things look. If we have the emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we're guaranteed full and complete success. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Matis Masei, Siyamu, Chazak on Sefer Bamidbar, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow. Those who are joining us now, a very, very warm welcome. Thank you for taking the time to come and join us on this Erev Shabbos as we head into the 9 days. We'll learn just now that this week is Shabbos Mevorachim. In fact, as we go, let's just get into the earliest, the times for this coming Shabbos. So, this afternoon, the earliest time for lighting Shabbos candles is at 4:34. 4:34 is the earliest time for lighting Shabbos candles. There's the Shem. We should try, as always, to chaperon if we can. If we're ready to be able to do it at that time, that'll be fantastic at all. To add a little bit, the Kedusha HaShabbos, the Kedusha HaChol, steal a bit of time, of extra Kedusha, of extra time to sit and contemplate, to kind of cut yourself off a little bit from the world, at least on some level, for some amount of extra time, and accept upon oneself the Kedusha of Shabbos. Oh, what a win. What a win it would be if we can't manage to start Shabbos that early. So anytime, right? The latest time for lichtbenching tomorrow is at 5:24. 5:24 is the latest time. So if you can do it 5 minutes early, 10 minutes early, 15 minutes early, and do some tefillah, do some davening, Klai Yisrael so needs our tefillot at this time, the situation is so precarious, so dangerous on so many different levels. If you can manage a little bit, Shabbos Avorchem, at least to try to get a little bit of extra in, that would be absolutely great. But the latest time for Bitlich benching this Shabbos is 5:24, which means we have to consider that the absolute latest time for doing anything. There is 18 minutes, of course, until Shkia, but that, as I always say, that is for emergency situations only, and not to be taken lightly. It's just extra time to do what you need to do. At 5:24, the house, we, our whole environment should be completely ready for Shabbos. And of course, ideally, we should already be in shul, because that's the time when most shuls begin their mincha. And of course, one of the Sfarim said that perhaps the most important tefillah of the whole week is the mincha on Erev Shabbos as we transition from Chol to Kodesh. That last tefillah can give us, add so much Kedusha to the incoming Shabbos. It's absolutely unbelievable. And that's why so often we kind of garble it and do it quickly and run into shul in order to get to Kabbal Shabbos, because it's so important. Of course, the Yetzirah would like to somehow incite us to do it not well, because and lose out on that tremendous influence. So the latest candlelighting time is 5:24. Shkia then is reverses at 5:42. That's the absolute latest time for anything, even the emergency. And of course, therefore, that means that if you want to be able to say Kriya Shema after night, night is at 6 o'clock as far as Shema is concerned, and that's late enough if you daven Ma'ariv after 6 o'clock. And as I say, most shuls will definitely do that. By the time you're saying Chadoidi and maybe had a drasha, it certainly will be past 6 o'clock. And then as part of your Ma'ariv, you can fulfill the special Torah mitzvah of reciting the Kriya Shema at night. Ah, what a win. And then, of course, we come home and we can enjoy another beautiful, beautiful Shabbos meal, a little Shabbos family together, and maybe some guests and maybe some Zemiris and some talking about the week and talking about the Pasha. There's certainly plenty to talk about. 244 psukim of Pasha, double Pasha, Matas Masay. Plenty of interesting and relevant and important things to speak about, and to speak about the week and let people express feelings and interests and concerns and worries and what they've learned and what they are sort of inquiring about. Ask questions. It's a great way of opening discussion to ask questions. Tomorrow, of course, is the double Pasha Matas Masay, probably the longest Kriya Satorah of the entire year. And of course, it culminates with Chazak Chazak as we complete Sefer Devarim, of course, and as we start Sefer Bamidbar, which of course means that we're starting Sefer Devarim next week, which means that at the other end of Sefer Devarim is already Yom Tov, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. It's already, you know, kind of the wake-up call starts already for El. But this week is Matas and Masa. And of course, we say a Chazak at the end of that. The Haftarah is the second one in the series of the critical Haftarahs of our Nevi'im, telling us about where we've gone wrong, where we need to improve ourselves. It actually continues flush from where last week's Haftarah ended off in the second perek of Yirmiyahu. And it really speaks volumes about the, as I said, the issues that we need to really kind of, even today, because nothing's changed, think about and work on perhaps improving both individually and communally in some of those areas. And that, of course, is the Haftarah of Parshas Maaseh, which anyway, normally when you have a double Pasha, we read the Haftarah of the second Pasha, which of course we will do. This Shabbos, as I mentioned, is also Shabbos Mevorchim, Be'ez Hashem Rosh Chodesh Av, which ushers in the beginning of the period of the more severe 9-day mourning period is on Monday, Sunday night, and Monday, one day, Rosh Chodesh. And so we'll say Baruch HaNechodesh, and of course, your shul, your community, whatever sort of practices and customs they have for Shabbos Mevorachim, be it a nice challah, be it a special shia, whatever it is. Of course, this is the week to grab it, and therefore, try to make sure you're in shul. First of all, to say Brichas HaChodesh, the brachas that we say that we need so, so badly to beseech Hashem for Chaim Shel Toiva, Chaim Shel Bracha, a life of goodness, a life of blessing, or strength, of health, of wealth. All these things that we daven for in Kiddush HaChodesh, of course, we will still say Avrachamim because it is the 3-week mourning period. Shabbos then carries on. It's already getting slightly longer. The Perek of Pirkei Avos this week is the second Perek Beis of the Pirkei Avos is what we lain this week, and of course we should not just lain it, we should try to learn it and try to get a little bit out of understanding what it's about. And Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6:15. 6:15 is the end of Shabbos, and as I say, from Sunday night we already begin the period of the 9 days. No meat and wine, no washing properly, no laundering, etc., except, of course, just before next Shabbat, and on Shabbat, of course, we can eat meat and drink wine. We are learning the laws concerning clothing on Shabbos, particularly we're dealing at the moment with tying and untying knots, and we actually mentioned at the very end that there are four types of knots. Number one, a strong and durable knot that is not meant to ever be undone. And of course, tying such a knot is mamish and issur d'oraisa, prohibited by Torah law. Right? Example of this type of knot include the knots of, let's say, of one's tefillin or tzitzit. Those are meant to be there forever. One should be careful and fair, in fact, therefore, to avoid tightening the tzitzis knots on Shabbos. Number two is a knot that has an element of permanence. For instance, like a knot that one plans to leave intact for a week or more. Tying such a knot is also midrabban, is rabbinically prohibited. Similarly, any kind of a professional knot tied by a kind of a craftsman, even if it's meant to last less than a week, has an element of permanence, and therefore, again, is prohibited by Chazal, right? Tying it on Shabbat is therefore forbidden. Number three, a temporary knot, which is meant to last for less than a week, and is not either a professional knot. So those kind of knots, one is allowed to tie on Shabbos. There's no prohibition at all. And of course, number four, knots that are so weak that they're not even categorized really as knots. Example would include a single knot or a bow knot, the other type that we usually use when we tie our shoes. So one may use such knots to tie things together, even if it ends up being for an extended period of time, there's still no problem with that at all. Now, of course, we've spoken about the laws of tying knots. We'll speak after the break about the laws of untying knots. This is 101.9 Chai FM. This program is soul to soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is soul to soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Pashas Matis Masei Tov Shin Pei Dalet, as we prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos. We are talking about the laws of tying and untying. So, of course, as we found with so many other parallel malachas, the laws of untying knots are parallel to those of tying knots. In other words, if tying a certain kind of knot, as you mentioned before the break, is prohibited by the Torah law, like we said, a knot that's meant to be permanent, right? So untying it is then prohibited by Torah law as well. If tying it is only an Issur Rabbanon, rabbinically prohibited, things that are professional knots or things that, right? So untying it, one can untie it. It is an Issur Drab, is an Issur Rabbanon, right? If one may tie it, then of course one can untie it as well. And a knot that one may untie in principle, but in practice is actually quite difficult to undo, may actually be cut. However, one should not do so in front of a person who doesn't know anything about halacha, because that might cause him to think that it's actually permitted to do things that are actually not permitted at all. Now, one may not tie a double knot, even if he plans to untie the knot on the same day, since this is a strong knot that can remain intact for an extended period. It may be that it is comparable to the knot of a craftsman, right? And the Shulta Gibarim says that, according to some Rishonim, like the Rambam, tying such a knot for the short term is an Issur only drabanan. So all this refers kind of to a tight sort of double knot, which one might use to tie his shoes or to close, let's say, a rubbish bag. But a woman may tie her tichel this way, since the tichel is not pulled tight. And those who are especially meticulous are strict and do not even use a double knot to tie their tichel. Okay, we're going to stop here for today. That's all the time we actually have. Just enough time to wish all of you an amazing, beautiful Shabbos. Shabbos of Menucha, Shabbos of Kedusha, Shabbos of Achdus, of Yidden coming together to daven, to learn, to really proclaim the Kedusha of Shabbos. And that's the greatest thing we do. That our learning, our davening is the greatest protection we have against whatever else is going on in the world. So thank you all for being part of our show today, as in every week, and just to wish each and every one of our radio family a beautiful, good bench, good Shabbos.